Two Time Labs Podcast, episode number 54.
Finding inspiring, fresh ideas in time-based productivity is like searching for a needle in a haystack. Join Francis Wade as he works with a special guest at Two Time Labs in each episode to create something brand new. A product the world has never seen in a way that keeps you engaged and also challenges your thinking. If you are a productivity nut, a person searching for new ways to improve your time management, or one of the busiest people you know, well, this is the podcast for you. There's nothing else like it. Stay tuned. The latest episode from Two Time Labs is about to start.
Hi and welcome to the first podcast in the new format that I'm following here at Two Time Labs. And in this episode, it's actually a very different from any I've done before or I will do in the future, because I'm going to try and explain exactly why I am coming up with this brand new way of doing podcasts. One that I've never seen anyone actually do, but I think is really critical and important for you, our listeners, as you move forward in attempting to get over productivity problems, solve challenges, use the latest thinking, and at the same time be educated, entertained, and engaged. So stay tuned. I'll jump right into it in just a moment. So I'm going to suspect that you and I share a few things. One may be that we both consume a lot of productivity sort of content. I listen to podcasts, I watch a lot of videos, I read a lot of articles, I tune into forums and communities on Reddit and Quora and Stack Exchange, GTD forums. I'm always looking sort of for the latest idea and for some inspiration. Where can I improve my productivity system based on what's out there? But particularly in the area of podcasts, I've come up sort of with a bit of a conundrum, and it led to the creation of this new format. Let me tell you how. So the current format that most people follow, and the one that I've followed up until now on the Two Time Labs podcast, is to invite a guest. And it's usually someone who has some kind of following. So some kind of background or experience in the area of, in my case, time-based productivity. Now, that's for selfish reasons, I would say. They have a following, and I'm hoping that their following will tune into the podcast and boost its ratings. It's also easier to interview someone who has already written a book. I kind of know what they're going to be about. They've already perfected their pitch, so to speak. They know what to say. They've probably been on a number of podcasts. And they're easy to work with, to book, to bring on the show. I find them easier to work with. But so do other podcasters. In fact, we're inviting the same guests to come on multiple podcasts. And no surprise, they're saying a lot of the same things. They're repeating the stuff that they wrote in their book. They're saying the same thing they said in the podcast the week before. They're answering pretty much the same questions over and over again. And they're coming up with exactly the same answers. And they're not saying anything new. It's the same stuff, basically ditto, ditto, and ditto. There's nothing new or surprising. Rarely does it happen that I'm able or a podcast interviewer is able to take the conversation in a different area or in a different direction, so it provokes something interesting. It happens, but it happens very, very rarely. It's really mostly yada, yada, yada. Heard it before. And there's an assumption also that the people listening, that you, the person who is tuning into the podcast, is a novice or an amateur, someone who is pretty much starting from scratch. Why? Because the messages that the interviewees or the guests tend to focus on are usually kind of basic, kind of very low level, been around for 10 or 20 years. Either they're saying the same thing, for 10 or 20 years, or if there's someone new, they've heard someone else say it, so they're repeating what they heard. So it's not new, and the assumption is that you are a brand new listener, you're a novice, and you've never heard it before. And as you're tuning in, the benefit would be that you will learn these basic ideas for the first time, like someone picking up their first productivity book. So here's the truth. I'm bored of the whole thing. The yada, 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 and the lack of surprises and the continuation of what was said before and the repetition and the same old answers to the same old questions is deadening. Now, you might say, well, Francis, it's up to you to go find better people. You know, who cares if they have a big audience? Go find people who are thinking new things, who are writing new things, who are on the cutting edge, people who've got something to say, people who've done research. Go find them and bring them on. I'm going to tell you, as someone who spends a lot of time searching for these folks, I'm a part of a couple of research websites where I focus exclusively on productivity and time management. These people are very, very hard to find, especially the ones who use any kind of scientific approach. Part of it has to do with difficulty in disseminating ideas in the field of time management and time-based productivity. That's a separate issue, though. But there are people who are, you know, someone who's writing a book for the first time on productivity topics, someone who is putting up a blog for the very first time. But the problem I find with many of these people, these writers and bloggers and vloggers, is that they don't really have that much scientific evidence to work with. What they're repeating and what they're coming up with is stuff that's already been said, cliches, stuff that's basically been around for 20 years. It's not new. It's the kind of thing that they would put in their first productivity book, only to find out 3 years later that everything in their book was said somewhere else, probably better, with more evidence by someone else. So I don't mean to knock them on the work that they're doing, because you've got to start somewhere. It's just that they're not the ideal kind of person for the podcast I have in mind here at Two Time Labs. I've always been about the sort of the productivity geek or the productivity nut, or the kind of person who actually needs a breakthrough in productivity, because they are among the 1% most busy people. They have more they can do in a week than they have hours. They have 168 hours, and they have way more than that, maybe hundreds of hours of tasks. And they're pretty driven, and they're pretty curious, and they're looking for solutions and for answers as to how to take themselves to the next level. They want new practices. They'll try new apps. They're looking at getting rid of habits that don't work for them. They're looking to pick up new, brand new devices. Oh, would a Fitbit work for me? They're interested in this kind of thing. These kind of people aren't on their first productivity book. They're not just starting out. They usually have read several books, listened to lots of podcasts, done a tour of a whole bunch of content, including podcasts like this one. So that fits you any at all. You may have the same feeling that I have of boredom. Like, there's nothing happening in podcasts, most productivity podcasts, that's new. And frankly, if I weren't able to solve this problem, the only alternative I could think of is to end the Two Time Labs podcast and go and do something different. I do have an alternative. I'm a part of the Productivity Cast, led by Sydney Smith, Augusto Pinaud, and also includes Art Gelwicks. He's also one of the contributors. And the four of us each week get together and share ideas about one topic, share ideas about or different analyses or different experiences or different notions as to what it would take to improve a particular area. So that's a great podcast, and I really enjoy doing it. But it doesn't quite scratch the itch in terms of the kind of research I've wanted to do here at Two Time Labs and the kind of experience I want someone to have when they listen to a podcast coming from a lab. So, you know, I looked around to see, are there other podcasts in any field which are sort of similar, kind of doing this kind of thing. Maybe sometimes a Freakonomics podcast kind of gets there, the NPR also. A few others that I really enjoy. Radiolab is one. But I think in the area of productivity, there's maybe some good reasons why it hasn't been solved. I don't think that people are doing the research that is required to produce the content that would be interesting to feature on a podcast of this nature, which the layperson would listen into. There's a huge gap between academia and what's happening out here in the real world. And I think that's one reason the problem hasn't been solved. Another is that the format, the accepted format, hasn't really been challenged, hasn't really been sort of tackled. And the options that I, you know, in my research, in looking at what are the different options of doing podcasts, for doing podcasts, there really aren't that many. And none of them fit what you would think of as a product of a laboratory. So, you know, I could just walk away and say, okay, I'm bored, I'm done, I'm not listening to any more productivity podcasts. I'm going to go listen to stories instead and stay out of the podcast field with respect to this area. I could do that, but and I'm not alone. And in talking with other folks, they also have that same experience of wanting to improve, coming to a place like Two Time Labs and wanting to consume content that could be delivered by a podcast. You know, they do spend a lot of time, like I do, looking for episodes or for entire podcasts, trying to find something they don't already know, something beyond the cliches, something that could be somewhat interesting, somewhat engaging, maybe even entertaining, maybe even educational, the three E's, which I borrowed from somewhere, can't remember where. But what if the podcast could hit the three E's every single time? I mean, it could be so good that it forces you not to be distracted, not to turn off the podcast when you're listening to it to go check your Twitter feed or to update your Facebook status or take a picture on Instagram. It would feature, because it's from a lab, some tight logic, some scientific thinking, some strong reasoning, data actually based on studies and experiments that involve hundreds usually of people. You know, not just a sample of one. There's lots of podcasts where the host says, you know, I rolled out of bed this morning and I tried this thing and it worked and you should try it too. Based on my success of doing it myself, and that's enough. You know, there are better approaches to experimentation than just using yourself and sort of seeing what works. But you know, I also think that people who come to Two Time Labs want more than just ideas. I think they want practical solutions. And I had that thought as I was thinking up this podcast. I would love to produce something tangible at the end of each show, other than just talk and just ideas and just notions. How about something people could actually interact with and actually use? Not just theory, but something they could put their hands on, maybe even interact with. Well, I thought all these thoughts, and I think I've stumbled across an answer. And that's why I put together this episode, to explain the direction I'm heading in. Before I jump into it, let me explain sort of how I got to it, and sort of what happened, which triggered the whole sequence of events, and it took place on the Productivity Cast show. It happened about 6 months ago, and it was a comment from Art Gelwicks, and a little bit of explanation. We tackle one topic per podcast, and we usually do it in Ron Robbins style, building on the comments of the prior person and introducing our own thoughts. And Art Gelwicks explained a framework that I had never heard before. He just gave the highlights, sort of the bullet points. And the host, Ray Sidney Smith, switched over to me and said, Francis, what do you think? And I had this moment where I was so interested in what Art started to say but didn't finish. And I said, Ray, can we go back to art and hear what's behind those bullet points? Because it sounds interesting. And Ray agreed, and he went back to art. All right, tell us some more. And as he told us the some more, I realized, oh God, this is really interesting. And I started to take notes. He had worked on this particular area for some time, and he had something to say about it that I don't know if he had planned to say it. I don't think he actually did. But the conversation took a turn, and all of a sudden there was this moment, a moment of serendipity, where something interesting was said that wasn't scripted, wasn't planned. So I thought of that moment, and I thought, how could that moment be multiplied? It took me back to my days as a volunteer at a company called Landmark Education. I was a seminar leader for a while. And the company's flagship program is called Landmark Forum. It takes place in 3 days and an evening. And it's a systematic approach. This is sort of the theory behind it. A systematic approach to producing non-linear breakthrough results in your personal life. So we experience these things happening sometimes by luck, sometimes by circumstance. They're usually not planned. It seems magical when they happen. We get an insight and it leads us to take action that changes everything, maybe in a relationship or in our job or in our career, but they're not programmed in the sense that they're not systematic. Well, the programs at Landmark are about making these insights happen on a systematic basis by design. So you get 200 people in a room and 75% walk away with something happening that they didn't expect to happen, that is of tremendous benefit to them in their life. And Landmark has found a way to make it systematic. So I come from this background. I was trained to lead their seminars. And I thought, so how could I make magic happen on every single podcast? That question sort of stopped me in my tracks. But then I went back to another experience I'd had back from 1988 to 1993. I was a member of the technical staff at AT&T Bell Laboratories, which back in the day was, you might say, today's version of Google Labs or the research arms of Microsoft or Apple. It had that kind of, you know, technology, cutting edge status, I guess, fame, Nobel Prize winners running around the halls, all sorts of very high achievements. But I remember as a member of technical staff having these deep discussions with my colleagues over usually a whiteboard. I remember one of our colleagues got involved or interested in what was then, I think it was a multi-level marketing company, and he was interested in signing up and signing us up. And we had a 2-3 hour conversation to figure out why it was not the best opportunity, why a multi-level marketing opportunity can turn into something like a pyramid scheme. A very deep conversation involving all sorts of mathematics. And, you know, when I don't have a PhD, but some of the other guys did. And as we got into it, 2-3 hours of figuring out the theory behind these kind of organizations. And at the end of it, I'd say we each came away sort of with an answer of our own, but the conversation was intense, it was informed, and it was designed to pull apart the business model of this particular company to discover whether or not it was sustainable or not. So there was an actual objective. So with these experiences, I gave a call to someone who's been on our podcast before, Dr. Michael Einstein, and he's an expert in the area of email and email management with respect to being productive in managing your inbox. And previous to that, maybe a few months before, I'd come up with something like a calculator for your overall state of productivity. And in that calculator, there were two lines devoted to email. And I thought, you know, that the whole thing didn't seem to work that well, by the way. It was an experiment, and I don't think it worked that well. Although it may be the subject of a future podcast in the new format. But at the time, I sort of gave up and put it aside. But the email portion of it, that sort of made me think that they had some promise. So I contacted Michael and said, you know, I've come up with this calculator around email. It's not very sophisticated. It has all sorts of assumptions. Would you like to have a conversation with me about it? And we could do it, record it, have it on air. Don't know how it's going to turn out, but maybe it'll work out. Well, that was in December of last year. And then January, we picked it back up. After an initial two-hour session, we had another two-hour session. And it took us all the way to October to have the final session. And I edited at the end and put it all together into one episode. But here's what I discovered in the conversation with Michael. And you'll be able to listen in to see how effective this was, how successful it was, whether we accomplished the objectives I wanted in one of the upcoming episodes here at Two Time Labs in this new format. But we found out that real time works. Discovered that having this conversation in which we could argue back and forth and disagree and correct each other and bring different perspectives was really useful. It just took a lot of time to get the result. Also learned that preparation is a requirement. You just don't walk into this kind of conversation without doing your homework. And also, it's required, even if you're someone like Michael, who's an expert in the area. Because the intention of our conversation was to produce something that didn't exist before. A health indicator, a health calculator. Something that could apply to the state of your email inbox. At any point in time, give you an idea of how healthy your inbox is. We also learned that I needed to check up on the latest thinking in the field. That I needed to sort of stay abreast and do some current discovery, basic research on what the latest innovations were. Because as you know, there's new technology coming out all the time. And is there anything that applies to what we're working on? And of course, as I've mentioned before, there needed to be a clear goal at the end. Fortunately, in this case, the goal was an interactive product. And I think the more interactive the product at the end, the more compelling and the more interesting the conversation is, because we're actually designing it for that audience, someone who's actually going to use it and then give us feedback on the quality. And that ups the ante of the conversation and makes it sort of more compelling. It's way more than just sharing a whole bunch of opinions that don't necessarily produce anything of any tangible value. However, I also learned through the process that I needed to make failure a viable option. So one of the things I discovered is that we could fail. We may not go anywhere. This may die an ugly death. May get to the point where we realize that we can't innovate a useful product or service or aid or app or tool, and we just need to call it quits. So that, saying that up front, I can't say that helps, because it could mean that you get to the end of a 5-hour conversation and have nothing in hand except a lot of interesting conversations. But the fact that failure is an option sort of makes the thing edgy, I'd say, in a way that allows for a little bit of magic to creep in. And in the conversations that I've had so far, magic has always crept in. Some serendipity, something unexpected. So even though we're holding on to our particular points of view and we have our way of looking at things, it's still possible to relate to each other as colleagues and not allow an argument to escalate into an ugly disagreement, but to have it turn into something kind of somewhat compelling. But you know, you should be the judge. As you listen to the upcoming episodes, did we hit the intent? You know, I kind of imagine that this should kind of be like walking on a tightrope. It should have that same kind of feel, that conversation that we had, about the multi-level marketing or any other conversation that we had at Bell Labs of that nature, they were all edgy. We didn't know if we could succeed at the very end or not. And if you were in the other cube listening, you could get interested to see, you know, how does it turn out? What did you guys come up with? You were at it for 3 hours. You hopefully came up with something. I was listening in and I wondered if the conversation that I have with the guest, I have sort of that feel that we're in one office in front of a whiteboard trying to address some problem, trying to resolve some issue. And you, the listener, are in the next room. You can hear, you're following the conversation. As you do with podcasts, you may be doing some other stuff at the same time, but you don't want to walk away because you want to see sort of what happens next and whether it works out. And also, you know, as the conversation goes back and forth, you'll find that there are parts that you agree or disagree with, things that you think are insightful, things that you think are just plain rubbish. You'll find yourself nodding your head, shaking your head, taking down a note, and sort of resolving that. I want to leave a comment because what he said here is total nonsense. Or, you know, he doesn't even know that there is this new thing that's out there that he should be looking at and he should be taking into account. And then finally, I think you should judge the value of the podcast you'll hear on in this new format on whether or not the product, if there is a product so far, fingers crossed, they've all produced an output that I think is useful, but something that you can use immediately, something that you can turn into an aid or a tool that you could use in your job, something that's, if you could not only use it once, but maybe use over and over again. So, you know, do the upcoming episodes actually produce these results? Are they, again, back to the three E's, educational, engaging, and entertaining? Is the output that we produce at the end actually of value? I want you to be the judge. You know, if we've done a good job in having these conversations and I've packaged them well enough and done the editing and appropriately and the output is workable, it should provoke a reaction. There shouldn't just be crickets. It shouldn't just be silence. But I'm going to ask you to let me know. Give us feedback on iTunes. Give us feedback maybe on Twitter. Go to my website. You could use the page that I have for feedback. It's www.replytofrancis.info. Let us know after each episode whether or not we're hitting the objective that I had set originally and whether or not this really is an experiment that is working. You know, in a lab, sometimes experiments work, sometimes they don't work. In this case, you get to be the judge. Now, I will, of course, tell you that I'm not an unbiased participant in all this. I'm not a scientist in a white coat who is observing and wondering. I enjoyed the conversations that I've recorded so far. They had lots of serendipity. They were fun to engage in. They were surprising. They were challenging. At times they were a bit annoying because we weren't seeing the topic the same way. It wasn't going the way I wanted. But I wouldn't be here promoting the podcast if I didn't believe that the episodes that I've already done were already effective and entertaining and educational, at least from my point of view, they hit the three E's. But that's enough of me. Let me know what you think. www.replytofrancis.info if you want to contact me directly. So I'll sign out. Thanks for listening to the justification for the new format for podcasts here at Two Time Labs. Take care and I wish you all the best. Thanks for listening to an introduction to a new podcast format here at Two Time Labs. And if you like what you've heard so far and would like to support the work we do, check out the link to my Patreon page where you can make a contribution that would help to fund the work that we're doing. Also remember to like our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever application you happen to use. Take care until next time. Bye now.